Hello and welcome to the Albion Obsessed podcast. You join us on this live edition where we are here to dissect today's game against Liverpool. But before we get into any of that, let's see who we've got on the show today. We welcome back Curtis. Curtis, my friend, how are you?
I am very good. I'm glad to be here. It's been a while. Looking forward to discussing today. Bring it on.
Fantastic. We were going to welcome back Aaron, but Aaron has disappeared. So now we're going to have Sony in the middle of the screen. Sony, how are you doing?
I'm in the middle of the screen. Woo! I'm doing okay. It is 3 o'clock in the afternoon for the East Coast. So good afternoon, everybody from the US. What's good, homies? I'm just excited to talk about the game today.
And we can welcome back Aaron. Aaron, my friend, jet lag is hitting you hard. But generally speaking, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm all good, thank you, mate. All good. Happy to be back in the mighty UK.
You just turned off the throw-up, Thomas. That's all. Yeah.
After two and a half weeks of being in the States, being stateside, so... Yeah, good to be back. Good to be back, mate.
And it is certainly good to have you back, Aaron. Welcome, 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 and welcome to anyone who's joining us live. As a live show, don't forget to drop us your thoughts and your comments. Let us know what you thought about today's game. And as we go through the episode, of course, drop in your thoughts in the talking points that we're going to discuss. Now, before we discuss today's Liverpool game, let's briefly talk, Curtis, about the game in midweek where Brighton and Hove Albion played their first Europa League game away from home in Marseille. Pretty spectacular occasion for the club. As a Brighton fan, Curtis, how mad is it that we were playing European football away? I know it's not our first European game, but it's our first away game. So just how spectacular was that for you?
I mean, I wasn't there, and I was so desperately wanted to. I was very envious. But it was kind of emotional, you know? Like, there was a time where I was like, okay, it's just a football game. We've got to focus and everything. And then when the game was about to kick off and you could see all their fans putting up the banners and stuff, I was like, wow, this is real. And this crowd is hot. You know, they're red hot and they're ready. And yeah, it's still not quite actually settled in for me that this is what we're doing and we've got this far. But I just still feel an overwhelming sense of pride for all of it. So that's my feelings.
And talking of being overwhelmed, Aaron, I think it's probably fair to say at times in that game against Marseille, the team did look a tad overwhelmed, whether that's because of the occasion, because of the fans. I don't know. But what was your sort of overarching thoughts of the game against Marseille?
I mean, it pretty much summed up really how our form has been, to be honest. We didn't participate well in the first half, and two stupid mistakes and they go two goals up. And same at Villa, it was same against AK Athens. You know, you make mistakes against good teams, they're going to punish you. And they did. And second half was much better. I think the atmosphere was crazy. I can imagine how loud it would have been as a player. Someone who'd probably never heard that before, to go into basically a cauldron of noise is basically what it is.
I don't know. It sounded a bit like Swindon away to me. That was very similar.
Sheffield Wednesday, you know, the massive Sheffield Wednesday. Leeds would have taken more. Leeds would have taken more.
Leeds aren't even a big club, so, you know. sorry, apologies. but no, it was a battling display in the end, and it's a point what we probably deserved. Yeah, I think so. I mean, if we didn't get a point on the board, I think it would have been a very, very difficult four games remaining. I think, or five, four, three, five, four, four, four games remaining. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And I think, Sony, getting a point on the board after disappointing defeat at home to Ajax Athens was really essential, especially as the result in the other game between Ajax Athens and Ajax was a draw, which keeps Ajax just a single point ahead of us in the table. As Aaron's alluded to there, a really battled, well-battled second half from the club, with Pascal Gross scoring on returning from injury, which was massive. And then up steps João Pedro late in the game to score a penalty. I mean, that man must have ice running through his veins.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I'm just happy for the fact that we got a point. That's critical. That's huge. I don't know what the sentiment would feel like if we didn't score that point. I know a lot of people were already, at least online, were being very critical about like how the game was played and the players and whether or not we were ready or whatnot. But we made it out somehow. And I hope that these two games so far have been a learning experience for everybody. We might be surprised in the next game. Who knows?
Yep. And experience is, of course, the best teacher. So let's hope that Brighton have had that extra bit of experience now, and then we can go into our home game against Ajax after the international break. With
can I just say, Ajax are terrible at the moment. Like, they're really, really poor form. They're like almost the bottom of their own league, which is crazy. I never thought I could say that. So it would be like us to lose to Ajax. But yeah, positivity, exactly. Positivity. It's going to be an exciting one, definitely. Looking forward to that one.
Yeah, a huge one. It's probably the one that, before a ball was kicked, it was the one I was looking forward to the most. Just because Ajax, a huge club, steeped in history. But you're right, Curtis. It would be the most Brighton and Hove Albion thing ever. To lose that. But let's hope that that doesn't happen. So let's move on then. Let's talk about today's game against Liverpool. And what better place to start than the starting 11. Six changes for Brighton from Marseille. In come Bart Verbruggen, Igor for his Premier League debut, Baliba for his first home start, João Pedro, Adinga and Ferguson. Out go Steele, Lamptey, Van Hecker, De Hood, Fatty and Welbeck. Curtis, a good starting 11. A lot of questions asked about who was going to play where. Most people thought that Solly March would take up that left-back role, which we did see. Curtis, do you think in the absence of Purvis Estupiñán and Tarek Lamptey today that Solly March was the almost foregone conclusion to start at left-back?
I'd say so. I mean, I thought he looked really solid today. No arguments for me personally with him. I mean, I totally understand why some people might get annoyed with the rotation, but it's just something that needs to be done. And we all just need to accept the fact that we need to put the freshest legs out where we can. But I thought all the changes today were really good. And they really impressed me. Like Igor, I thought was really decent today. And let's hope his injury is nothing too bad. But I'm sure we'll get onto the other people. But like, you know, I liked the lineup today, and you know, I was excited to see what these players could bring.
Yeah, certainly. I think all the players that came in acquitted themselves very well. Now there was a player, Aaron, that caught your eyes in the warm up today, and that was Bart Verbruggen. You said he looked a bit shaky out there. He did improve. Aaron, let's come to you on this one, because we've spoken a lot, generally speaking, about the rotation. We understand that because of the sheer amount of games we're playing, because of the fact that they're very close together, a lot of these players have to be rotated in and out. However, goalkeepers perhaps not doing as much running, so maybe not as physically exerted, not saying they're not mentally exerted, but a few questions being raised about the continual change of goalkeepers. Would love to get your take on this as a goalkeeper, as a goalkeeper coach. What is your take?
See, it's a difficult one, because how is Bart going to learn the system if he doesn't play the system? But at the moment, he's not ready in that system. So it's going to be one of those where, at the moment, we pick one or the other to be number one. Simple as that. The rotation has to stop now, in my opinion. It has to. Unless there's injuries or poor form, then we switch. Has still warranted enough this year to be number one? probably only just, but not, let's not be right. He hasn't been great this year, in my opinion. Last year, fantastic. Couldn't fault him, and I won't fault him for that. But it comes a time and a place where you just got to stop and go, rotation, it can't happen now. It just can't. You need to, because I think this is where the issues are surrounding our defence. Because I think Chloe said it earlier in the chat, is we need stability as number one, as two set like a back four, and trust in your goalkeeper to build the trust, understanding. And if you're changing your goalkeeper every other game, it's going to be very different every other game. And, you know, granted, when Sanchez was in, we all knew what he was like. So we sort of, the centre-halves would expect the ball to be pinged into him, or the full-backs to drop in when need to, and just little things like that. And I don't think that's helping our cause at the moment. And if I'm honest, I thought defensively we would look very good up until we conceded. And then we were a little bit all over the shop again. And I've no doubt we're going to stand in a little while. But it needs to stop now. It needs to stop. And I think I'm not going to take any away from Bart. I think he's done well when he's come in. But I just don't think he's ready for the system as of yet. How is he going to get ready is a whole different question. Because how are you going to get ready if you're not playing games? And this is the multi-million dollar pound question.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I think we can all agree that I think that Bart Verbruggen is a future number one at this club, a consistent number one. I mean, it's not unexpected. De Zerbi said at the beginning of the season, he has two number ones. He will rotate. But I think the early evidence would suggest, as Aaron does, that perhaps rotating goalkeeper might not be the best course of action at the moment. Let us know your thoughts in the comments section down below. As I say, rotation when you're playing as many games as close together as we have been is understandable, but goalkeeper perhaps less so. So it'd be really interesting to see what other people think of there. And Sony, we can't not talk about the squads today without talking about the return of the Mac. Alexis McAllister coming back to the Amex for his first game as a Liverpool player. We talked a lot in the summer about the right ways and the wrong ways to leave clubs when other players perhaps left the club with less than a stellar reputation, but Alexis McAllister, many fans would say, left in the right way. How good was it to see Alexis McAllister back? And the reception he got at the Amex was overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, I mean, I know that at the very end of the game, when everybody was doing their little, like, clapping moments, there's a video actually on Twitter right now that's circulating of De Zerbi hugging, exactly, like, he's over here hugging McAllister and just pointing at the crowd to, like, cheer him on, like, hey, dude, he's back. And you can tell the crowd, like, fed into it, because Alexis truly, in my opinion, has not done anything wrong to the club, to the fan base. He was very grateful and was still humble all the way until he left. He played 100%, didn't give up when he got benched. Like, in the year or so that I have been following this club, I have always seen him as a really good role model for not only, like, himself, but for other teammates. And up until the very end, he was grateful and he was excited to tackle a new challenge. And I ended up finding an article from, like, 4 days ago that was just recently posted about the reasons why McAllister left, which I should probably retweet that at some point because I thought it was a really interesting read. But overall, I don't know. I was just happy to see him again. He was very important to our team last year. And to see him currently thriving in another team and that team's, like, fan base kind of, like, giving the same support as we would here, just – It's nice. It's nice to see, you know, someone leaving. I can't really say, like, proper way per se, because there truly is no, like, proper way, but more of, like, a dignified, like, hey, thanks for everything kind of way versus, like, I'm not going to play for the team anymore. Bye. As we've seen with plenty of other players, some we will not mention on this episode. But yeah, there are ways to leave a club, and McAllister leaving definitely left an impression on everyone.
All I'm saying is beware the snakes in the grass. That's all I'm saying.
I think very well put, Sony. Very well put, Curtis. Just Justin in the comments. It's a tough situation with the keepers. So just going back to that talking point there. Bart, as you say, Aaron needs minutes to get comfortable with the system and reach his ceiling. But Steele hasn't really done anything wrong to lose his spot. Conceding six.
I think Steele has been poor this year, in my opinion.
Marseille as well.
Second goal. Granted, that's Dunk's problem, but he still should be saving that. Some of the goals against Villa should be saving. You know, the only if you're going to drop him because of that, then that would be harsh. But if you got two goals, he was pushing for that number one jersey, as in they are both basically number ones. Then the slightest mistakes have to be punished. Like, you cannot make errors. Like, look at Arsenal with Raya and Ramsdale. Like, they've got two world-class goalkeepers, and Ramsdale has a couple of iffy games and gets dropped. And I would imagine now Ramsdale will come back in, because Raya was absolutely awful, from what I've heard today in the City game. Because it's just fine margins at this level.
Yeah, it's.
I agree. It was the same with Webster, wasn't it? When Webster had a bad few games, we replaced him with Van Heck, and that was pretty good when that happened. So,
yeah, we've said on the podcast before about competition breeds, excellence. It can only help, and we've seen in the past how when players don't have that competition, they tend to get a bit lazy. See Matty Ryan, Robert Sanchez, obviously. Big Bart, he's made a couple of mistakes himself today. We'll talk about that in a bit. And against Bournemouth. But again, you know, it's hard when you're a keeper, because the slightest mistake you make normally ends up in a goal more often than not. But let's get into the action, as it were, then. Let's talk about the opening few minutes. And it was a bit of a shock, Curtis, to see that in the early phases of the game, we had a couple of set pieces and they weren't awful. Set pieces this season have generally been shocking, attacking and defending. But as Dagan says in our group chat, in the early stages, we had perhaps what were the best organised, best looking and the most dangerous set pieces and corners we've seen this season. And it almost led to Solly March scoring. And we did see, obviously, later in the game, us scoring from a set piece. But in that early instance, Curtis, just how refreshing was it to see us actually look like we might be a bit dangerous from a set piece?
Well, I'm guessing they've taken up the tactic of holding the set piece coach's family hostage or something and saying, I want results. All right, I want results now. But basically, it was good to see those pieces finally fitting together because we've been woeful with our set pieces for quite a while. And the set piece later that led to the goal, I about had a stroke when that goal went in. I was so surprised. I was like, oh, right, cool, yay, Dunk. Because I know that you, Tom, have been someone that's nitpicked the fact that we've usually been quite bad with our corners and our set piece goals. So how did it feel for you to see these set pieces paying off?
Yeah, it was. I think it was very refreshing. I think defending set pieces has been shocking this season. But it's quite funny. Every time we get a set piece, it normally just doesn't beat the first man. It was nice to see it just mixed up a bit. I think it was the corner. Gross went short to Pedro, and he whipped it round to March. It was just something a bit different, and it was nice to see.
By the way, why is Dunk taking free kicks? Whose decision is that?
Because of that one time he did it against Liverpool. Yeah.
Liverpool.
And then he did it against Brom, and then
He has got a good technique, to be fair. Mm. The technique's fine. I just don't get why he's taken. Like, just let Gross or March take it from there, because you're not going to beat him with power there, because you're just going to hit it either over or at the wall. Unless you absolutely whack it and it moves and dips everywhere, it's not going in. You know, or Alisson has a howler, which he did rare.
Yeah, it's because he's living off those two free kicks, one that counted and one that didn't. he's got a hell of a kick on him as Dunk, but you're right. If you want March or Gross over that, really. But as I say, it was just nice to see us actually threatening from set pieces. And yeah, Aaron, you talk about goalkeeper howlers and Alisson. Let's talk about what was a little bit of a howler from him, perhaps more so from Van Dijk or Alexis McAllister, that led to our first goal. It was a poor pass into McAllister, perhaps caught ball watching, and a dinger nips in, takes a touch, and from what, 25 yards out, just strokes it into the bottom corner. Alisson probably should do a little bit better, maybe perhaps not expecting him to take that shot so quickly. A hell of a goal though, Aaron. A hell of a goal.
Yeah, it was, yeah. I think the pass to McAllister wasn't great, and then the goalkeeping after that wasn't pretty, let's put it that way. I think, like you said, I think he's caught him off guard a little bit, but even so, a keeper of his standards should save that. A keeper of it, that's bread and butter, really, for him. But it was watching it when it live, when it happened, it was a little bit confusing. Like, how was that just gone in? Like, it literally made no sense. And watch replays, and yeah, it's not. It is very, very poor goalkeeping. But it's what we deserved. It's what we deserved, because I think we started the better team. And if I'm honest, in large parts of the game, we were the better team. I think we'll come on to it, no doubt, later. But again, it's just individual errors. Again, which is a common theme at the moment.
Yeah, it is, unfortunately. But you are right, Aaron, because through most of that first half especially, it was probably the best football we'd played since Manchester United, in my opinion, at any rate. Sony, just really quickly on Simon Adingra and his goal. The lads seem to be absolutely everywhere today. Really exciting to see him starting, especially with Solly March playing at left back. He's looks like a very promising young talent, absolutely electric today.
Absolutely. I know that he was very out there during the summer series, and that was also refreshing to see. I mean, Adingra, we saw Igor, we saw Baliba out there. They all did extremely well. I can't really say that none of our youngsters or none of our, like, you know, older or newer additions per se did a horrible job. They all played really well. Again, experience is what was needed. You know, seeing Igor start was really nice. Adingra just looks like he's playing, like dancing out on the field like it's nothing. And to see someone with that much passion and joy, and for him to score a goal, you know, the first goal in a very important game, at least to us, is, you know, amazing. I have high expectations for all the guys. But in terms of Adingra, I think if we start him a little bit more, we get him some more minutes, he's going to be an amazing player for us.
Yeah, he certainly will be. And assuming that Purvis is out for a bit longer than anticipated, perhaps Solly March starting a left back isn't the worst thing in the world. We know he can do a job there. Played left wing back under Graham Potter, left back today. He did so very well. Curtis, Sony mentioned Igor there. One of my favourite moments in the first half, I should say favourites really, was when Salah got into the box and he rifled a shot and it hit Igor square in the face. But the man is so hench, so massive and so strong. He was just, yeah, up on his feet. Curtis, really, really fantastic performance from Igor today. He looked solid. He looked better than Lewis Dunk today, in my opinion. What did you make of Igor in his first Premier League start for the club?
Well, first things first, my thoughts go out to the ball and the ball's family. That looked like that hurt. But I thought he was fantastic today. Because I thought, what was the last game he played? What game did we last see him
in? He played in the game against Ajax Athens.
Yeah, that's right. And I thought he looked a little shaky in that game. Definitely. Well, we all looked a bit shaky in that game. But yeah, I was so happy to see him do really, really well because I'd seen some of his stuff before he came to us, and he looked really impressive, and it seems like he's getting it and he understands it. But again, As Aaron mentioned, unless these players get the minutes, they don't fully understand the style of play. So I hope we see more of him. And I feel like we are going to, with this Purvis situation, he could fit into that position as well as just being a straight-up centre-back. So hopefully we get to see more of him because, yeah, he really impressed. But yeah, right, he definitely was better than Dunk, who's made a few errors over the past couple of games.
Yeah. He has, unfortunately. Hello, Andrew. Thank you for joining us. I see your comment in the chat. We will be discussing that a bit later on in the show. And don't forget, guys, drop us your thoughts down below. Let us know what you are thinking as we are chatting. If you are joining us live, Aaron, just before we talk about how things started to unravel somewhat at the end of the first half, we've got to talk about Belieber. Absolute monster today. Just did not stop running. And there was a moment in the first half where he just powered through the middle, cut inside Alexander-Arnold and fired a shot wide. It was Bissouma-esque in its just its ball-carrying quality. Roberto De Zerbi said, I think it was in a press conference before the game, that he believes that Belieber will be better than Moises Caicedo. They are different players, but he believes Belieber will be better. An absolute monster today in the middle of the field against very tough opposition.
Yeah, he was outstanding. He for me, probably was man of the match. Him or Odingra for me. He just made a bit of a difference having a bit of physicality in the midfield. I think that helped. But yeah, I'm just echo what Curtis said. He was outstanding today.
Yeah. Yeah, I think every player that you've mentioned, Sonny, about that has come in, Odingra, Belieber, and Igor, really fantastic. And I think any of those three could warrant a shout for man of the match just because of how well they've done. And I think all three of them probably deserve to, you know, to start after the international break. It'll be interesting to see how long Igor will be out for as he was unfortunately taken off in the second half. But again, starting with a natural left footer at left-sided centre-back, which we were calling out for when Levi Cole will return to Chelsea. He looks good, Igor, and I look forward to seeing more from him. Unfortunately, as I said, you know, this was probably the best half of football we've played since Manchester United. And then it wasn't, because two errors led to two Liverpool goals. Let's talk about the first one. Sony, Lewis Dunk, he's not having the best of times at the moment. A few individual errors strewn across the last several games. He makes a pass out from the back. He attempted to actually make the same pass several times throughout the game. And each time he made the pass, it went straight to a Liverpool player. But the first time he made the pass, it was intercepted. Liverpool broke with pace. And Mo Salah, a player much like Ollie Watkins, Danny Ings and James Ward-Prowse, loves a goal against Brighton and Hove Albion. And he slots in left-footed from the right-hand side of the box. A really disappointing goal, Sony, to concede. One that, as Aaron has alluded to, was made from an individual error.
Yeah, that was not ideal. That was less than ideal. I actually was at a Liverpool bar in DC today. As you can imagine, the bartenders were very nice and they put me next to the tamer Liverpool fans because the rowdy, crazy ones were upstairs in their own little bar. And even it was so refreshing to talk to new people, especially of different teams, and get their opinions on like, how did, you know, like what their teams were like. There were definitely like moments where they all freaked out in anger, and there were moments where they all like got excited. And the Mo Salah goal was one of those moments where they were just like, yeah, you know, an error. It did a thing. Like they were able to pick apart and tell that Lewis Dunk was not having a good game. They were definitely talking about Ferguson. I had a lot of questions about Mitoma at one point. They were definitely asking like, hey, how's your team doing? How are the new players doing? But yeah, to see Dunk concede that goal, or at least be part of that, less than ideal. I feel like maybe he's in a funk of some kind. Maybe the international break will help him. especially because he's going to be on the England squad during the break. So maybe that'll help him get back in a stride, or he's just going to continue to slip. Either way, something for De Zerbi and everyone else to take a look at. It could be a physical thing. It could be a mentality thing. Who knows?
Yeah. I think we saw against Marseille in the week, obviously made a mistake for their second goal, went down after Pedro scored the penalty. De Zerbi said he was feeling sick. And I've made one controversial point this season already. I'm going to make another one now, Curtis. I don't think Lewis Dunk should go away on international duty. I think his form at the moment is wobbly. I think he might benefit for some rest. And that pains me to say it because I've been such a huge advocate of Lewis Dunk playing for England for years. What do you make of my somewhat controversial take?
As much as it pains me to say, I think I have to agree. I think he just needs a sit down, a bourbon biscuit and a cup of tea, just not doing anything for a while. I just think that the run of games we've had, very hard, very tough games, can get to you, you know? And I understand from Roberto De Zerbi's point of view that, you know, sort of Dunk's kind of not droppable. Because I'd argue we look worse without him as well, which is kind of funny. But again, we need to maybe try and figure out different centre-back pairings, you know, to allow Dunk to have, you know, maybe not start, essentially. But going back to your original point, yes, maybe. But I know that how well he played in the last game for England. I don't know. Who are we playing? Who's the international game against? Do we know? Ukraine or something, I believe it was, maybe?
Is it Australia and Italy, I want to say?
Yeah, quite physical teams.
It's terrible that I don't know who we're playing against, but that's just...
I literally couldn't give a shit either. I can't lie to you, Tom.
Yeah, and there's a chance that, you know, Dunk might not even start either of them. So, you know, we don't even know. But I think ultimately, Tom, I see your point, and I think I agree.
Yeah. Really sad to say that. Really, really sad to say that. But that's what my heart tells me. And as you say, Curtis, the man deserves to put his feet up, have a little bicky, have a cup of tea, and just watch a bit of telly. Aaron, let's round off the first half by talking about the second goal, which was from a penalty. Albion again. Guilty of being loose in possession.
Loose? Understatement.
Yeah.
Christ.
Verbruggen has two options when he gets that ball.
Incorrect. He has one option.
Pass it to the right.
Incorrect. You've just conceded. We're under pressure. You go long. You get it out. You reset. Simple. That is the only option there.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
I think that, I suppose the only reason I say there's another option is just because of, obviously, you are right, Aaron, because it all comes down to the ability to, yes, we know that you've been drilled to play this certain way. However, sometimes you just need to kick it into Rose Ed.
Yeah.
We said that about Webster against West Ham. He just dilly-dallying and he should have kicked it out. But I think the reason I said that was because I think on the replay, I noticed that, I don't know who it was. It was another defender out on the right-hand side or to Verbruggen's right-hand side.
Yeah, right. It would have probably been Dunk or Veltman, one of the two.
Yeah, instead of playing that par, he played it into Gross, who's got two Liverpool players around him. Gross, you know, it was played into a very, very difficult position, loses the ball, drags back his man, and it's a penalty. But Aaron, give me your thoughts on the penalty shout and the Mo Salah penalty.
Oh, it was a Stonewall penalty. I mean, there was two Stonewall penalties, realistically. People were saying that Gross probably should have got sent off, but I get why, because he's not actually playing the ball. So remember, right, the rule is if you're playing the ball and concede a penalty, it's only a yellow. But if you don't, so like if a keeper pull someone down or you're not looking at the ball, anything like that, then I'm pretty sure that's a red. But then again, that sounds like Taylor's whole entire game because he was fucking useless. We had the whole issue started with the pass out from Bart. Gross's touch or pass back, or I don't know if it was a touch or a pass back or whatever it was abysmal. But don't play him in that position. You literally fed him a hospital pass. And at that moment, they're always going to score. Like, as soon as they press and win that ball back, they're not going to miss from there. They're too good to do that. And Salah does what Salah does best and starts it away. It was a good penne, and it was undeserved, but we make our own mistakes yet again, own downfall yet again. And it's little things like this is why we're conceding so many goals. I'm just going to go back to it, because we're just making individual errors. Right, there is no need to play Gross into there. Like I said this to our manager's group chat for the team I coach with, is I look at every game now and I'm like, as a coach, not as a player. And like, you're thinking, just go fucking long. Just get it out and reset. Because Liverpool are right on your ass. If you try and play short, they're just going to press you. Like, if you play one, maybe two or three passes under pressure, in the end, that will tell, and it did. Because there was numerous times where they were close to nicking the ball for Bart, and you know, it wasn't just, you know, one or two times. It was a regular occurrence in the first half, and it got us caught out again, same as the Bournemouth goal. You know.
Yeah. It's as you say, and it's very frustrating, because when we look at the amount of goals we are conceding at the moment, you know, we haven't kept a clean sheet all season. I've lost count of how many goals we've conceded this season. It's a lot. You know, we've scored a fair amount, don't get me wrong, but you know, we can see we've got such a leaky defense, and you know, we've picked that apart in what that looks like in a rotational sense. But and De Zerbi came out after the game and he apologized and he said, look, I know we're conceding bad goals at the moment. So it is an issue that we know he's aware of. The style of football he wants to play is high risk, high reward. And we always knew that it was going to be that way. And, you know, if you think about the goal against Bournemouth, you know, that's been a long time coming. You know, for years, it's been like that. I'm amazed it hasn't happened more often. But, you know, there were better options on for Bart there today, much better options. Even if you want to play it short, there was another defender not that far away who wasn't under the same amount of pressure. But it was a really frustrating way, certainly, to end a first half of football where Brighton had looked comfortable from the majority of it. For 40 minutes, we played very, very well. And then we shot ourselves in the foot, which seems to be the Brighton way. Sony, how frustrated were you to go into halftime 2-1 down?
I definitely was afraid. I wasn't really sure what the guys were thinking about. I definitely, we were doing so well. We were doing really, really well. Everybody was passing the ball. Like, everybody was making sure that it wasn't getting too close. And then the moment that someone switched off, it's like dominoes. One domino falls, everybody starts falling apart. And we just kind of look very disjointed. We didn't look together. And we know we can do better. We've seen better. We've seen us play really good games. We've seen us really play like bad games. It's always the games that whenever we're in the middle just look really, really shaky. I just want to see just one game where we just have one clean sheet of some kind. Just one. One.
Sorry, I would come love on, you're one. Asking too much. You're asking
I know.
Too much.
I
Our
know.
Next game should be quite easy, because, you know, that's going to be an easy one. No big, powerful strikers in that team that are going to cause us problems.
Oh, yeah. No, none of that.
But, yeah, it was again, as Aaron's already alluded to, very frustrating individual errors, costing us points. And a stat that the commentator said at halftime, which did not sit well with me, was Liverpool haven't lost a game that they've led at halftime in 7 years. So, you know, that was one that I was quite not looking forward to. We played ourselves into some problems at the end of that first half. And it was pleasing, though, Curtis, as has been the case over the last couple of games, that we came out the second half and we did look more threatening again. Early in the second half, Ferguson played a wonderful ball down the right-hand side. Adingra absolutely rinsed Robertson, and Ab Alisson made a fantastic save at his near post. But Brighton, again, showing life, showing signs of that we would get back into that game. Was it rewarding for you to see that the Brighton that we've seen going forward after half-time, after a disappointing half or end to a half, was out on the pitch?
I mean, I remember the days of when we would go 2-0 down and the heads would just drop, and that was it for us. There's just so much more fight and heart and spirit and gumption, good word, gumption, in this team. And today's word is gumption. But yeah, it's nice to see that fight, because you know De Zerbi will not allow you to not go out there and try. He would kick your ass at the halftime. You know he would. And I mean, we saw how angry he was today in the dugout. It was hilarious, actually. But yeah, just as I said, like, it was the same as the Marseille game, just to see that spirit, you know, us wanting to fight back, and we did, and yeah, quite proud.
Yeah, it was rewarding to see. We did start the second half much better, generally speaking, and we did look the better team. And then suddenly, Aaron, out of nothing, Liverpool really should have gone 3-1 up. They got down their right-hand side. And I think his name is what? Gravenbach?
Gravenberg, yeah.
Yeah, Gravenberg. He smashes the ball against the bar from about 4 yards out. Should have been 3-1, Aaron. That should have been it. That should have been game over.
Yeah, to be fair, I actually thought he hit it wide. Like, I didn't realise how bad the miss was actually in the ground. So I was thinking, oh, like, he it couldn't be that bad. And I watched the highlights and over home. I was like, oh, Jesus, that is a horrendous miss. I was like, that's 3-1, that's game over at that point, really. So they're not gonna get back into it. Then the heads would have probably dropped a little bit, and then it could have got worse. I'm glad it didn't, for obvious reasons. But yeah, that should have really been... That moment should have been game over, really.
Yeah, it would have been very hard for us to come back from that, I think. But thankfully, he left his shooting boots at home. It seems that not the only player to do that. We saw João Pedro do almost exactly the same later on in the half, when it was 2-2. But before we get into that, we've got to talk about another potential penalty call. Now, before we get into the ins and outs of it, I think the context here is quite important. But obviously, last week we saw Liverpool get one of the worst, one of the worst VAR controversies happened to them. It was terrible, awful. And since then, you know, the changes have been made. I always felt like today we could be on the wrong end of some calls because of what happened to Liverpool last week. Almost a sort of we'll make sure we don't give you anything vaguely controversial just because we screwed you over last week. And there was a controversial moment, and it's one moment that I think I wouldn't be calling controversial if Lewis Dunks hadn't been given a penalty against Luton. If that hadn't happened, I'd probably been like, yep, fine, okay, fair enough, you know, ball hand, that's fine. But the fact is, the ball comes into the area, it hits Van Dijk's leg, it hits his hand. And normally I wouldn't even begin to call that a penalty. I just wouldn't. But they gave a penalty against Lewis Dunk against Luton for it hitting his back and then his hand. And I know there's certain rules about, oh, because he was sliding along, but it's the infuriating lack of consistency that does my head.
The problem is there, Tom, is the ref gave that penalty. The ref didn't give the one today. So there's not enough to overturn that decision.
Yeah. I get where you're coming from, Aaron.
Is it a penalty? No, it's not a penalty. Like, it's not. If anything, there was another one with Robertson down the left-hand side where, granted, Adingra has kicked the ball at his hand, but, you know, if we're going back 2 years, that's a penalty because it's his hand. It's hit his hand. Like, Robertson slid in, and then Adingra just literally kicked the ball in his hand, which nothing was looked at. It wasn't a penalty either, but if we're going back a couple of years ago, that's a penalty because it's touched his hand. And the officiating in this league, not even this league, in England, is just a mess. from the very bottom to the very top. Interesting fact, I'm going to have a report written about me from the referee for my game yesterday, so that's going to be fun. I'm getting a lovely fine in the post, so yay for me.
By the way, congratulations, Aaron, on winning a little trophy yesterday.
I know. Thank you very much. No, thank you very much.
The charity game as well. Very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my goalie right there, everybody. My goalie.
Thank you so much. Man of the match. Retired too soon, guys. Retired too soon. The state of officiating is a mess in this country. Really is. And I think it proved that last week at White Hart Lane. It's gonna be the same for years. I can't see it getting any better, really.
I know, so we're diverting a little bit, but there's a fantastic panel of Sky Sports pundits, including Paul Merson.
I haven't seen it yet.
It's well worth a watch because
it's
just interesting. You can just see the frustration of the panel as they talk to Mike Dean about it all. Somewhat ironic, obviously, because Mike Dean refused to give Chelsea a penalty, was it? Last season, because he didn't want to make his mate look bad. I think with the Van Dijk incident, you know, it wasn't a penalty. My gut instinct says no, it's not a penalty, but it makes me angry because obviously we gave a penalty away for Luton, for something quite similar.
If it's given, it doesn't get overturned.
Yeah,
in my opinion,
but that's the thing. They didn't even check it. That as well.
No, they did check it.
Oh, they did. Okay.
How is this for a conspiracy theory? They didn't give it because of what happened last week. That's a conspiracy theory that I don't necessarily subscribe to, but I just, it does my head in because the next week a referee wouldn't, and that's not okay.
Last week was literally a shit show for there's no other really word for it. And I think if there was a more controversial decision in the game, then you could argue that. But for me, it's not a penalty. It wasn't. It never was. I don't know. I understand why Twitter is going off on a mad one saying it's a penalty. It's not. Even in the ground, I didn't even see it. Like, I didn't even realise it hit his hand. But yeah, it's just, you know, what fans are like.
And just for the last time, and just as we close on this, I don't think it was a penalty. I genuinely don't. My frustration comes from the lack of consistency in officiating rather than penalty. But as you say, Aaron, the on-field decision, perhaps not clear and obvious error, VAR won't overturn. Fine, I can accept that. Might have been a bit different, though, Sony, if the game had ended differently. But it didn't, because we scored from a set piece. Oh, I've come over all emotional. Yes, Lewis Dunk, the captain, scores from a set piece. And there was some pretty questionable defending from Robertson in there. But let's not take it away from Lewis Dunk. You know, right place, right time, gets us into the game, gets us a point, Sony. As wobbly as he had been throughout the game, it was fantastic to see Dunkey on the score sheet once again.
You know, shout out to Lewis Dunk again. Like, sure, he's inconsistent and whatnot right now. He's in a slump. But hey, maybe that goal will improve his morale. You know, there's nothing better than helping your team win, either indirectly or directly. You know, so even if you didn't score a goal, like, okay, cool, I won. But the fact that you got a goal in, that should mean something. So, you know, I'm happy that he got a score in, and maybe that'll be the good morale booster for him. And maybe he'll improve once he gets back from the international break.
Yeah, let's hope so. Fantastic moment to see Dunkey back on the score sheet, our captain, after, as I say, a pretty tough time for him.
Tom, if you look in the ancient texts of Nostradamus, you have like floods, fires, and the yearly Lewis Dunk goal.
Yeah, you know. Do you remember that season he was the top scorer?
Yes, I do. Yeah, that's mad to think about. Yeah,
and it is, you know, we've been sat here, this season we very much moaned at our set piece defending and offending, as it were. It wasn't that long ago that Lewis Dunk and Shane Duffy were scoring from set pieces for fun.
What a pairing they were at one point, though.
I don't know. Shane Duffy's the sort of man that you'd want, you know, if ever, like, deep impact happened. You just send Shane Duffy up into space, doosh, be fine. Duncan Duffy, what a pairing. But no, Lewis Dunk rescues a point for us. It could have been three if João Pedro had had done much, much better when pretty much, well, it was harder to miss. Lovely cross from Simone Adingra. He just launches it into the atmosphere. But the game ends 2-2. And I tell you what, Curtis, the players at the end, they just looked absolutely dead on their feet. Belieber ran his socks off, and you could see at the end he was really, really struggling. The lads looked tired.
He was cramping up, wasn't he? Like, he had to stretch. But you're right. I mean, what you said about him not stopping running, he just ran the entire game, and he was outstanding. My man of the match actually was Belieber. I think in the end, as I say, I was fairly proud of the heart and the gumption and everything else. But it was disappointing. Just these fine little margins. That Pedro chance. Just I wasn't angry really throughout the entire game. Maybe a little bit at the first two goals, but that Pedro one sent me to the moon. I was proper pissed off. I was just like, no. But it is what it is, and he'll improve. But I thought he had a pretty good game otherwise today. So,
yeah, I thought we said about the top of the show, Pedro, Igor, Belieber, Adingra, they all played really, really well. And I like how we're getting quite a few space references into the episode today. That's pretty nice. Just before we do go on to the player of the match, I know that Curtis and Aaron, you've already alluded to who you think it should be. There's just a stat I'd like to share with you. Because Roberto De Zerbi is the first Premier League manager that Jurgen Klopp has faced four or more times across all competitions and failed to beat, drawing to and losing to. I mean, that's pretty a pretty spectacular start. I mean, whether you like him or not, Jurgen Klopp, fantastic coach. Liverpool look a lot stronger this season than they did last season. So a point is certainly nothing to be sniffed at. So all that remains, I suppose, in terms of this game, then, is to decide who you want to be your player of the match. I mean, Curtis, are you sticking with Belieber?
Yeah, I believe I will. But shout outs to Adingra, who I thought was really good today. I thought Solly had a really good performance as well. But yeah, I'll give it to Belieber.
Fair is fair. Aaron, who gets your Man of the Match award?
Belieber.
Ooh, Sony. Player of the match, please.
I'm going to give it to Adingra. Yeah, I'm going to go against everyone else. I mean, it's always hard for me to pick a man of the match because everybody's so good. Everybody does a great job. But definitely Adingra today. Dude ran his butt off and got us to get a point today. Can't be mad at that, you know?
Yeah, he did. He really caused Liverpool a lot of problems with his pace. For me, I'm going to give it to... I've got to give it to the fans that turned up and cheered and clapped. No, I'm going to give it to Belieber as well. I thought he looked sensational today. You know, when he came on for his cameo a few weeks ago and we were like, wow, this lad looks really good. And then I think it was the next game he started and he didn't look so great. This game, he looked very good, looked very assured in possession, and just looked strong, powerful, ran with the ball. And yeah, he just did not stop running, even when he pulled up late in the game with his muscle fatigue. He just didn't stop, and I respect that a lot. So a big, big moment for the young man. I've got hopes that by the end of this season, we will see a regular midfield pairing of Billy Clifford Gilmore and Belieber in that double pivot role. That is where I would go. Some shouts out from Andrew to Adingra. Yeah, again, a fantastic game for him. I thought Igor did very well myself as well. Being obsessed. Joe is saying he is ready, referring to Belieber. It'd be interesting to see...
that Joe guy comments a lot.
I know, right?
Weird.
Bro, who is that guy? And why is he talking?
He's obsessed with us. God.
Can we block him, mods? Is that all right? Can we do that?
I'm sure we can. Let's talk ahead then to post-international break. Because we go up against champions Manchester City, who are on the back of some pretty poor form in regards to their club. They lost to Wolves and they've lost to Arsenal today. Aaron, is there potentially a worse time to play Manchester City?
Yeah, this is probably the worst time we could have probably played them, because they're going to get all rested and fit, and we're just going to probably end up getting spanked, to be honest with you. It's like, it's the terrifying thing. If they're in great form, I'd be like, you know, if we just hold out and be 100%, we can try and match them. But the fact they're going to have a point to prove scares the living shit out of me. It really does. I can't lie. Even when they're not fully fit, they'll have Stones back playing, they'll have, you know, they'll have Haaland, et cetera, et cetera. They'll want to prove a point. You know, they've not played, this will be their first home game in almost a month. So they're going to want to put a show on. And unfortunately, with our defence at the moment, I can't really see us stopping them, in my personal opinion. Then I'm the miserable old man, so we'll probably end up winning 2-0 and keep a clean sheet.
I think what's going to happen, have you seen Rocky IV, where Ivan Drago is doing that like super intense training sequence with all the blinky lights and all the sciencey stuff? They're going to get Haaland doing that, and I worry about...
No, he'll just get plugged in and get recharged, and then, you know, we'll just, you know, score 5 or 6, and then...
I mean, we need to find someone that we can plug in and recharge, you know...
We do it, Danny Welbeck, the battery's just flat.
Okay, well, we need to plug him in then. We plug him in, we're fine, we're good.
No, you need to put 50p in the meter in his back. That's how he works.
Well, the only thing that could make it possibly worse, and I don't mean to pick on him, but let's just hope that we don't end up playing Adam Webster, because the last flashbacks of Adam Webster versus Haaland, and they're not pretty. Let's put Van Heck.
Van Heck had him on toast in the last game, yeah. So let's do that.
Van Hecker and Igor, and, you know, we'll just double team. Just get Igor to literally just hold on to him, his leg, as he just trails him around the pitch or something.
That would be a foul, Tom. That would be a foul.
Stop ruining things, Aaron.
Not if they look the other way, okay? If the referees look the other way...
Tony, this isn't Italy. We can't just bribe referees.
I'm just saying, it would work. It could work.
I mean, we could, but...
Just because we have an Italian manager, Curtis, does not mean we're going to go down the match-fixing route. Andrew just put in here, is a good time for the team to have a break, considering it's international time again? Yeah, you can see the lads need a rest. They left it all out on the field today.
They're blowing out their arse, I can't lie.
Yeah, they need a rest. And let's hope that they get a rest, because then when we come back, it's going to be a really tough game. I'm going to push you for a score prediction ahead of Manchester City. I know it's 2 weeks away, but I'm going to do it anyway. Curtis, I'm going to come to you first. What do you reckon?
Okay, so you know me. I am the positive one of the group. So a whole lot of me wants to say a draw to be positive. But there's a very large part of me that's going to say we're going to lose like 4-1 or something, maybe more. I do see a scoring, though. I do see it. I'm going to say a draw, just to be conservative and be positive, even though down inside I'm dying. So
I'll take the draw. Aaron, what do you think?
Yeah, we'll pass to Sonny next thing.
Sony, what do you think? Score prediction, please.
It'll be 1-1. I think we're going to tie. That's like the best possible outcome I can think of. We tied last time. We did pretty well. Let's tie this time. I don't want to lose. Are we going to get our butts beat? Maybe. I don't know. Like,
But we'll make it look good.
So. Well, yeah, I mean, we can make it look good. But honestly, in all seriousness, definitely a tie, 1-1, hands down.
I would take it. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say that it's gonna be it's gonna potentially be painful. I haven't got high hopes just because of how poor we are at the moment defensively. So I'm gonna go with 4-3 to us, because why not? We're gonna score four goals apparently.
Yeah, positivity.
Concede 3 goals at home. Okay,
but I know. No, of course, yeah, it's going to be tough. It's going to be next to impossible. But all we can do is turn up and hope for the best. I'll be very happy if Phil Foden isn't playing, because he's another one of those players that just seems to score against us all the time.
Yeah, to be fair, I wouldn't mind if Foden wasn't playing. Haaland, Alvarez, Rodri, Bernardo Silva, Edison, Ake,
Let's
Diaz,
just skip Manchester United,
Stones,
or City. Let's just skip City.
If happened, like, a really bad case of, like, the shit went round their club, you know, and then they'll have to pay their kids. But then again, probably at the moment, their kids will probably break through our defence. So, you know, we move.
And there you have it, listeners and viewers. Aaron is wishing a bad case of a dicky tummy upon the Manchester City squad.
That's the most British thing you've said this entire time. Yeah. A dicky tummy.
Okay, some of us need to keep it above board. But no, thank you for joining us this evening. Just before we sign off air, don't forget to check out One Klopp Shop, who we are affiliated with. You can use the code ALBIONOBSESSED, all one word, all uppercase, to get yourself 10% off vintage shirts.
How much, Sunday, Tom?
10%, Curtis.
Wow, that's a good deal.
And tonight, on a Sunday, they do 99p bids on eBay. So all their shirts they put on eBay, 99p start auction. So you can grab yourself an absolute bargain, 10% off. Check them out. Thank you for joining us. Let us know your thoughts and your things, feelings, in the comments section down below. Who was your player of the match? What did you think? Did you think Brighton need to stop shooting themselves in the foot? Please let us know, as well as your score predictions ahead of the easy game against Manchester City. Please be kind. Wherever you may be, whenever you may be, we'll see you again soon. Take care.